Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
And let's bring in one of my favorite guys to follow on Twitter. You can follow him at Tommy Beer. And yes, that is his name. Tommy Beer covers the NBA and basketball for NBC Sports and Forbes. He's going to spend a few minutes with us on this Saturday morning. Tommy, how you doing?
Doing very well. Pat, how about yourself?
I'm doing great. Lots to talk about. We're going to shift gears a little and focus on what happened in the NBA last night and kind of big picture stuff with you as we look ahead to the postseason, which looks like after last night, Tommy, it will include one team from New York, which we're all excited about with the Brooklyn Nets. But James Harden last night, 61 points. Again, we saw what he did in the Garden a couple of months ago, coming 1 point away from the Madison Square Garden record. The amazing thing with this guy, Tommy, all season long, these scoring binges that he has gone on, they're not cosmetic. I mean, Houston has needed each and every one of these points to stay where they are in this Western Conference race.
100%, Pat. You know, this is a team that, as of 3 months ago, were at 14th place in the conference, and they've really gone on an amazing, you know, to climb all the way back into the middle of the playoff hunt in the Western Conference. You have to give a ton of credit to James Harden. Not to be, as you mentioned, the scoring binges. They've been without Chris Paul and Clint Capella for much of that space, so it really is incredible just how well he's played over these last 3 months.
Elsewhere in the Western Conference, the Nuggets were at Madison Square Garden last night. They're in the playoffs, which is a big deal for them. They haven't been there since 2013. Same time the Knicks have been out of the playoffs as well. But Denver's going back. You know, they look good last night, 111-93. You know, how surprised are you? Obviously, Jokic has had a phenomenal season, but he's not this guy that can just take control of a game and get a bucket whenever you need it. They don't really have that guy on the roster. So how surprised are you? How impressed are you with what Denver's doing this year?
You have to be impressed by, you know, everything they've done, you know, basically from start to finish. I think the thing that you bring up a good point in the playoffs, when it comes down to, you know, to a game six, a game seven and a crunch spot, who are they going to go to get that key bucket? Jokic is not that guy, even though it's as incredibly talented as he is. Is it a Gary Harris? Is it a, you know, a Paul Millsap? Is it a Jamal Murray that steps up in a big spot? The one thing to keep in mind with the Nuggets, though, I think that, you know, they deserve some respect, and you have to keep an eye on this. They're 30-6 at home. That's the best home record in the league. Obviously, they played at an altitude up in Denver. If they get a team like the Warriors or another team, they can get a team on the ropes. If they can, they have a chance of securing home court advantage throughout the Western Conference playoffs as well. So if they can pass the Warriors and finish the regular season with the best record in the West, that's not a team you want to play in a best of seven series when you're going to have to play three or four games in Denver.
And they pulled even with Golden State with last night's win. They're both 49-22 and tied for first. So in your mind, is home court advantage more important for Denver than the Warriors or maybe any other team out in the Western Conference?
I do. I think so. When you consider their style of play, they want to push the pace. They want to play up tempo. Mike Malone likes to get everybody involved. And, you know, it takes some getting used to playing at that level. They obviously have a very, you know, they're familiar playing in that environment. And, you know, when you consider the fact that they have the best home record in the league, it certainly speaks to the fact that that's a team that, you know, you should be worried about going to their building.
Tommy Beer is our guest here on the Dave Rothenberg Show. Pat O'Keefe filling in for Dave on this Saturday morning. Tommy covers the NBA for several outlets, NBC Sports and Forbes among them. I see at the Garden all the time, Tommy, so let's bring it closer to home and the Knicks. And we know all season long it's been a development year. It hasn't just, and I'm a firm believer in this, it hasn't just been about quote-unquote tanking. I do think there is another element to this in terms of developing the young talent that also needs to fill out this roster in the future. So with that in mind, I want to ask you, how successful were they in developing this young talent this year? What are the positives in terms of the Knicks player development this season?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Pat. You know, there's one thing to lose, and when you lose, you know, 50-plus games with Aaron Aflalo and Jarrett Jack, that's kind of a lost season. But the Knicks have developed, you know, you've seen Damon Dotson really play well, especially Mitchell Robinson. You know, he's at least two blocks in 21 straight games now. There's a lot to like there. Obviously, you can't call the season success. Could be the worst season in Knicks history. But when you look at the fact that they have developed some of the younger guys, there is a lot to like.
On the other side, what are the negatives? Are there areas where the Knicks kind of fell short this season in your mind in terms of player development? They didn't get as much out of somebody as they may have hoped to at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think Kevin Knox and Neal Akeen are those guys. Obviously, Neal Akeen is battling injuries. Looked pretty good in his return last night. Even though he doesn't score, he's a solid, consistent contributor on the defensive end. And Knox's shooting efficiency hasn't been what the Knicks would have preferred. But keep in mind, Neal Akeen is just 20 years old. Knox just 19. This guy is still, there is a very high upside with those guys. And Knox has played a little bit better of late. But obviously, efficiency-wise, you want to see Knox pick his spots a little bit better. Don't settle for long contested jumpers. Take it to the basket a little bit more. Those are the kind of things, with the last 10 or so games left in the season, you really want to see if he can improve in those respects.
Those are your biggest concerns with Knox, the efficiency? Because, he's had his moments, but you're saying he settles for jump shots a little too often?
He does. He's shooting around 36% from the floor. Over the last two seasons, there have been only two players that have attempted at least 800 field goal attempts and shot below 36% from the floor. That's Frank Neal Akeen and Kevin Knox. So that kind of speaks again to their inefficiency. And you also like to see him improve a little bit on the defensive end. His, kind of intensity on that end of the floor waxes and wanes a little bit. Not quite as good as a rebounder as you would have hoped. All things considered, I'd probably grade him out at around a C for the season, as far as Knox is concerned. But again, he has the physical frame you love, a 6'9", great wingspan. He should just be a sophomore year in college playing in the NCAA tournament right now. So if he can improve on certain aspects of his game, and a lot of that will depend on, he's asked to carry the scoring load a little bit more than you'd like to from an 18-year-old rookie, just because the Knicks, again, once they traded Tim Hardaway, they just don't have the same type of offensive talent, obviously without Kristaps Porzingis in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, the plan is, if the Knicks are going to accomplish what we all think they're planning on accomplishing, the plan wouldn't be for Kevin Knox to carry that scoring load this year or next year, right?
Exactly. Knock on wood, best case scenario, a guy like KD comes into the picture, Kyrie Irving, whoever else it might be, assuming they drafted another stud at the top of the draft, Knox would certainly have to a lot fewer shot attempts. And could maybe camp out in the corner and, get more comfortable as he kind of grows into his NBA body.
Tommy Beer, who covers the NBA, NBC Sports, and Forbes. Let's do some around-the-league stuff. The MVP race is fascinating. It's clearly a two-guy race and very different candidacies. You have the reigning winner in James Harden, and he certainly added to his case last night. He's averaging 36 points a game now. And then you have the quote-unquote best player on the best team in the NBA who does a little bit of everything in Giannis Antetokounmpo. So what side of the fence do you come down on, Tommy?
Pat, I keep on going back and forth. This is something we've talked about. I've kind of been leaning towards Giannis for the majority of the season. They're 50-16 when he plays. They're just 1-3 in their last four games when he sits out. Best player, you can make a case he's going to be the defensive player of the year. That's how good he's been on both ends of the floor of the season. But Harden has just been, as we talked about at the top, such a monster just in terms of offensive production. It really is incredible. He's got six games with at least 57 points or more this season. That's more than LeBron James in his career, more than Allen Iverson, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry have never scored 57 more points in a game. He really has taken his offensive production to a next level this season. If they continue and he continues to, when you look at the numbers at the end of the year, I think he'll probably win it. Again, I would probably vote for Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I certainly wouldn't be upset if Harden was the vote. You can make a very strong case that he is one of the best offensive seasons, not in just recent NBA history, but in the history of this great game.
Now, we've seen in recent years, if you have won this award before, sometimes it can work against you. We've seen it happen to LeBron James. We've seen it happen to Stephen Curry. Do you think that if Harden didn't win it last year, that his candidacy this year would be any different?
Yes, I agree. There's definitely voter fatigue. I think last year, even though he certainly deserved it, a lot of the votes going in his direction had to do with the fact that he was, quote unquote, robbed of the award, the prior two seasons. We could make a case when Westbrook won it, et cetera. And there is some, the voter fatigue is an issue. And I think something else that might play into voters' mind is Giannis Antetokounmpo, amazingly, is just 24 years old. So he's going to have the rest of, 4 or 5 years when he enters his prime, which is frightening to think about. But maybe we give it to Harden and, wait for Giannis to kind of develop.
All right, there's two candidates, as we said, for MVP. I think there's a lot of candidates for a couple of other awards. And I want to get your thoughts on both of these. Coach of the Year and Most Improved. Let's start with Coach of the Year. There's a lot of exemplary jobs that have been done this year. Where are you leaning when it comes to the coach of the year in the NBA?
I'm leaning toward Mike Budenholzer, coach of the Bucks. You know, he took over a team that was kind of floundering. And, you know, when you talk about coach of the year, one of the things a lot of people look to is number one seed in their conference. And you know, when you make a massive improvement from year to year, and you know, Budenholzer checks off both of those boxes, really improved the Bucks. A couple of the guys, you know, Nate McMillan of the Pacers, Mike Malone of the Nuggets, Dwayne Casey of the Pistons, Doc Rivers of the Clippers. There's a lot of guys in that group, but for me, Budenholzer gets the vote.
And then it's not usually one of the most exciting awards, but the most improved player is very fascinating this year. There's a guy in this town on the Brooklyn Nets, D'Angelo Russell, who I think is a clear candidate for that. Where do you go for the most improved player award?
D'Angelo Russell, certainly a strong candidate. Really have to be impressed by the way the Nets have you know, taken a big leap forward this season. He's kind of taken that leap, and I thought it was kind of poetic that he was the guy that eliminated the Lakers officially last night. So, you know, he felt good about that, the Nets with the victory in Los Angeles over LeBron and company. For me, he would probably get, you know, I think he finishes in second. I think Pascal Siakam out in Toronto has been absolutely fantastic, really developing into one of the true stars in the NBA, flying a little bit under the radar with all the other storylines in the league. But you look at, you know, production from one year to the next, I think Siakam's the guy for most improved.
And we're talking with Tommy Beer. You can follow him at Tommy Beer on Twitter. Finally, Tommy, I want to do some NBA draft stuff with you. You do a mock draft board. Everybody's still buzzing about what Ja Morant did on Thursday. Where does he fit in at the top of your board? And did his performance at all give you any thought to maybe somebody other than Zion is the number one pick?
Yeah. Well, let me just say, I think Zion goes number one for multiple reasons. One, I think he has the highest upside of anybody in the last few years coming into the league. And two, even if the GM and the scouts all think, listen, Ja Morant, you know, his game translates a little bit better. He's a little bit of a safer pick. I think when the owner comes into the room and says, listen, we're going to sell out our season tickets for the next 10 years, the day we get the number one pick and, you know, we can start selling Zion jerseys through the roof. I think that does play a factor. So I think that Zion is very, very safe to assume he's going to be the number one pick. But I do think you have to give credit to Ja Morant. Obviously, the production was important, but just his poise, the way he didn't, you know, let the big game, you know, obviously NCAA in tournament can be intimidating. He just played with a lot of confidence, played really well, didn't try to do too much in their opening round victory. So I think he made a very strong case for at least number two. I think he's locked into the top three, and I think where he falls, two or three, will probably depend with RJ Barrett on the team that picks him. For instance, if the Cavs land the number two pick, are they willing to pass up? You know, what do they do with Colin Sexton, who they drafted number eight overall point guard? But I think most teams will have probably moved Ja Morant into the number two slot ahead of RJ Barrett. But I certainly wouldn't be shocked if RJ Barrett's still number two on many teams' boards.
The jersey sales aspect of it for you, that's the Forbes influence coming out of you, isn't it, Tommy?
Gotta factor it in.
No doubt, it's a big part of it. Lastly, here in New York, it was a disappointing year for St. John's, we know that. There were high expectations, they got off to a great start, they did not finish well, they were one and done in the NCAA tournament, and now a lot of questions surrounding that program. Shamori Ponds, local kid out of Brooklyn, tested the NBA waters last year without an agent, came back to school for his junior season. All indications are that he's probably going to move on from St. John's, and if that's the case, where does he fit in the NBA draft this year?
Yeah, you could make at best, he's probably high second round. I think at the start of the season when he was playing really well, you could have made an argument he'd be a late first rounder. But he kind of tailed off a little bit. You saw he had some problems efficiency-wise at around 6'1", 180. Defensively, it's probably difficult to see him matching up and being an above-average defender on the next level. So I think he's a scorer. He's a point guard, a position of need in the NBA. Plays with a lot of moxie, Brooklyn kid, a lot of confidence. I think the Knicks would love to see him slip into their, you know, they're going to have a late second round pick. They actually own Houston's pick in the second round. So I certainly wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they took a shot at him, if he was still on the board, in the 50s. But that would obviously be a disappointment for Pons. But I think best case scenario for him, he lands somewhere in the 30s. Goes to a team that needs a point guard and can get playing time right away.
All right, we'll see how that plays out. Tommy, great stuff, and I look forward to continue to follow you on Twitter and everywhere else. Thanks a lot.
Pat, thanks for having me. Have a great afternoon.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.